There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring doing stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a podcast!
Yeah, we're gonna be a podcast!
Starring everybody!
And me!
There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fuss that ends for us real happily.
Hey, a podcast!
We can hear it all develop!
Starring everybody!
And me! We'll take the world and set it on its ear.
Come on, join in.
We're gonna start right here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Virtue. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey, guys.
And we're also joined by a very special guest. It's Colin May of the Canepa Effect. You can find him on YouTube. You've probably heard of him before. He's done some work for Anime News Network. Colin, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's no problem. Yeah. It's good to be here.
It's great to hear from you. So before we get into the sort of, today's sort of dark subject, since we haven't had you on the show before, what have you been watching lately that you really, here's my first big question. Have you seen any movies that you really liked?
So I've went to see the, since I live in Japan, every single Hollywood movie gets delayed by a whole bunch of months.
Right.
So for us, 1917 was a 2020 film.
Sure, yeah.
And it was kind of I absolutely loved it.
Oh, really? Yeah. So yeah. Have you guys gotten Sonic the Hedgehog yet?
We haven't. Sonic the Hedgehog is next month. Oh. And I was so disappointed because that was my Valentine's movie date. That it was going to be, yeah, date with Sonic.
Yeah, no, 1917 was quite good, but that was also kind of a 2020 movie here too. I mean, it opened on Christmas in sort of limited theaters, and then mostly hit like the week after. So,
Did it do that to like qualify for the Oscars?
Yeah, that's basically what happened. But you enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of the like a one-shot technique in Birdman, but I felt like 1917 like really captured the tension of like you only get a break when the characters get a break, and like never being able to separate yourself from the situation.
Yeah, and they don't get very many breaks.
Yeah,
it's war.
Yeah.
Well, you know, war.
Yeah, like the best times when you get a break is like, oh, thank God, the protagonist got knocked unconscious or like beaten into a state where they're just gonna lay there for a bit.
Right. Yeah. What did you have a favorite movie from last year?
It's probably The Farewell.
Oh yeah. Oh, good choice. That is a good one.
And I saw both Parasite and The Farewell on a plane like back to Japan, and I love Parasite. I love everything that it does, but the amount of heart that's in The Farewell and there's some sense of relatability to the story, and I cried.
Yeah, it's a
an ugly cry on the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I feel like it didn't get its due at the Academy Awards.
I was looking around for it, and I guess like it doesn't count as a foreign film because it's made in America. Most of it's in Chinese, but yeah, I would have thought that there was something it could have won, like Best Director. Was kind of hoping, but
yeah, or at least some more nominations or something. I wouldn't have expected it to win, but then I also didn't expect Parasite to totally fucking sweep.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I was so happy about that. I think it's the first time I'd already seen the Best Picture winner in recent years.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And more importantly, what winner 2020 anime are you keeping up with?
I got really into The Witcher 3 recently, and that's killed my anime watching time. But I have been working towards catching up on Keep Your Hands Off Izokin.
I was about to say, if you tell me for even a fucking second that you are not watching Izokin, I will be like, no way.
I mean, I'm not up to date. I'm on episode 5 so far, and it's... are we allowed to say, like, best anime of 2020 already? Like,
yes.
I mean, we did it with Devilman Crybaby, so why can't we do it with Izokin?
Man, I feel like,
that's Sainsaru. They just take it. Just take anime of the year. We don't need to wait for the others.
Yeah, I'm a little weirded out that they're doing like a live action version already, and then there's like going to be a movie and stuff, and it's like, they nailed it already. You don't need to do more versions of this.
Yeah, I have some trepidation about the live action version. I don't know if this is like mean to say, but I think the actresses are too cute.
Wow. I got that impression as well.
What do you expect?
Yeah. Like, Asakusa is gremlin-like. Mm-hmm. And it, like, you can expect, like, she kind of, like, from a distance, she kind of looks like a frog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're not going to even get that impression in live action. I'm really interested to see how they portray animation, like those moments where everyone gets brought into the animation. Like, it would be awesome if that's 2D animation combined with live action.
Right. When it kind of like meshes into a singular world, I don't know if you could really do that with live action without it looking kind of, I don't know, like Michael Jordan in Space Jam or something. It's just sort of...
Yeah.
Well, so have either of you seen the official video for Easy Breezy, the opening theme?
Oh, no. I didn't know.
It does that. It is like a little Space Jam-esque. Uh-huh. They kind of do what you're talking about. It's pretty cool. But I would not really be all that interested in not Yuasa's version. Like...
Yeah,
I kind of just want Yuasa's version of this because the emotion is all right there. And frankly, like, you know, I have to write the show up every week, and writing that show up is a real challenge because so much shit happens in every single episode. It is like breakneck pacing. Weirdly, even though it's kind of a relaxing show to watch, the pacing is kind of breakneck. Like, so much shit happens in every episode. So if you're not gonna be this succinct about it and just this straight to the point, I don't know how I necessarily feel about that, but I'm sure we'll see it at some point. Whatever. The existence of a live action version does not negate an animated version anyway. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's like something to watch afterward. Like the Phoenix Wright live action movie. Like,
oh, geez.
You can just enjoy the fact that exists.
Yeah.
Rather than like having to actually accept that as the version of Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Anything else on your radar this season?
So, Beastars.
You got to see that.
Yeah, Beastars is on Netflix here.
You asshole.
And weirdly, they put English subtitles on the Japanese version before the version in the rest of the world has launched at all.
Oh man, so, that makes me just extra mad.
I wonder.
Yeah, so we basically got the show that everyone else wants.
Uh huh.
With subtitles that nobody hears actually they use, so that's been great.
Now, in the back of my head, I'm thinking they probably thought it would be launching on Netflix sooner than it did, and it comes out here in like 3 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. March 13th.
And that was the impression that I got, was like, well, we don't even know what Netflix is planning, and they won't tell us. So
right.
Here's the version we made. You know, I guess we'll get that in a little while, but. How do you feel about that one? Is that a good one?
It's a lot different to what I thought it was. I think a lot of people saw it and thought, "Oh, anime Zootopia."
Yeah,
but I was surprised how much high school drama it is.
Hmm.
Like, it's got elements of Zootopia, but mainly in kind of the setting design, like the idea of big doors for large animals, small doors for small animals. They specifically state that everyone in this world is a vegetarian, just to make sure that we're aware that no animals are being eaten within this world. And yeah, it's about this kind of it's about the same conflict in Zootopia as like primal instincts versus like living together and all that stuff. But it's darker and kind of more pointed. And there was tons of like, I can't help but compare it to Zootopia, but in like kind of the opposite sense. Like Zootopia is full of kind of like racism analogies, whilst Beastars isn't quite that. It's hard to say like what the message of Beastars is, but it's really like production wise, it is fantastic. I think there's a lot of issues that I had with Land of the Lustrous that are smoothed over a bit now, and of course, Orange makes better CG anime than pretty much anyone else in the industry.
Right.
Yeah. And no disagreement here.
Yeah. And the directing style, I think people can really look forward to this idea of conversations. Every conversation, even if it seems quite light, being really tense because they use split screens and you see reactions to what some people are saying. Like, it must have been a ton of work because they need to essentially like animate extra shots and then splice them together. Yeah, and there's a load of like weird techniques that I just haven't seen in any other anime. And like, most of these could work in anime, it's just nobody seems to have thought of them before. Like using like reflections to splice two shots together. And it's a really impressive show. So I think it's going to end up being a big deal.
Do you like the story?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's just hard to describe what the story is, especially without spoiling it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. It's all right. Just wanted to know. You know, I'm very excited to see it for myself. I love that. Of course, I've seen that stop motion opening that has been posted all over social media here. And every time I see it, it's very charming. So
yeah, I loved Rilakkuma and Karu, and then seeing like Dwarf Studio like doing the opening to Beastars, it's like just keep them around. The studio usually does these like little ads for the NHK, like small things like that. But yeah, I really want to see them on more anime projects because it's so fun just to have a different style.
That's the same studio that started out with the little like brown guy with the red mouth.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but yeah, it's that guy.
The you know, that little guy was everywhere and now I can't even remember his name.
He had a marketing push over here in the US at one point, but
that was
like, you could get stuff of him in Target for a while.
You could
and now we don't remember what his name was.
Brown Cube.
Yeah.
Brown Cube, right. With the teeth and the little eyes and that guy. I don't even know how to look that up.
Nope.
Like, type into Google little brown teeth guy.
Oh, I was just thinking, like, I think it's like his name starts with a D. I feel very strongly that it's like Daru
Domo-kun.
Or
Domo-kun, right?
Domo.
Okay, Domo-kun. Yeah,
is
yeah.
that
so
it?
That rings bells.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's Domo-kun.
I'm like, I know it's like four letters, two syllables. God, what is it? Yeah,
something Domo-kun. Like that.
Okay.
All right, the world changes fast. Just got to keep up with it. So, before we get into the news here, I also wanted to ask you, Callum. So, the Olympics are coming.
Oh, yeah.
And there is this huge sort of global threat of the coronavirus.
And, oh, really? I haven't heard about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. And I was just wondering if life in Tokyo, which is where you live, has changed at all, or if it, like, what it's like with these two sort of giant things sort of coming up.
Well, there's a lot of like fear and when you go on trains, they show off like just headlines of stories, and pretty much every day now it's just like new coronaviruses, especially with that ship that's offshore.
Right.
Yeah, the Diamond Princess.
So there's been a lot of events where they're getting very strict about using masks. They're getting very strict about people washing their hands, and several events have been closed. It's not that there's a big outbreak in Japan, but there's just a lot of fear. I mean, with the Olympics coming up, I think I can't see it being cancelled. It takes World War III to cancel the Olympics.
Yeah, but Anime Japan, on the other hand.
Anime Japan, I think they will happily kick that down.
Bushiroad's already pulled out of Anime Japan entirely. They were going to have like 3 or 4 different presentations on some of their new shows there. But it kind of makes sense when you think about it. Like, I was thinking about the Diamond Princess earlier today, and you know, you have, and I think all these events being canceled are preemptive to avoid large groups of people coming from different areas altogether and possibly spreading amongst each other. Because when you look at the Diamond Princess, you had maybe a single infected couple on the boat, and they just tested like everyone on there, and it's pretty widespread for the people who are quarantined on the boat. So, you know, you just have that intermingling of a whole bunch of people, and it apparently doesn't take very many people carrying it for it to quickly spread through a much larger population. And so they're just trying to prevent that.
Yeah, that's the big fear with Tokyo specifically. I think I heard there's something like 1 or 2 million people that move through Shinjuku Station in a day.
Right.
So you can imagine
one of the busiest subway stations in the world, and they get tons of foot traffic through there every single day. I mean, it's Shinjuku Station, though. I mean, that's, you know, not internationally connecting, obviously, but it's still like it's a lot of people. You have one passenger on one train who just got back from a trip come through there, and it's pretty scary, I guess. But they don't have like, your neighborhood's not like on lockdown or anything.
No. We just see more people wearing masks in day to day. Spring's coming up, so there would already be people wearing masks. It's just now they're wearing a bit earlier.
First, it doesn't surprise me about Shinjuku Station because, of course, it's extremely busy all the time. But in springtime is when you typically see I would say, it feels like half of everyone is wearing a mask.
And that's for allergies, isn't it?
Pollen allergies. The pollen here is like a bit different to some places overseas. So people who might not have hay fever overseas might have it quite bad here. It's just there's more people. I think there's even like a status effect in Persona 5, which is specifically about like everyone being sick because of the pollen.
Do people not just like take Zoloft? Or we get a lot of pollen here in the Pacific Northwest too. It's just an over the counter allergy medication. Like, we get a lot of pollen over here in the Pacific Northwest too, and like I have family members that, you know, get pretty serious hay fever type, you know, itchy eyes, watering, sneezing fits, stuff like that. But they just take
a Claritin D or something like
that. Yeah, or a Claritin or something and call it good. And it's just like a cultural difference, I guess, that we just take that instead of wearing masks. You don't really see people wearing masks.
No, that's not a thing. But, who knows if things will change and this sort of, in my opinion, kind of overhyped.
Hyped isn't really the word I'd use for it.
Right. Everyone's real excited.
Overblown. A little overblown, but I don't know. I'm not an expert. It's just
it's hard to know. We know that we're never going to get straight numbers out of China for whatever the effect is. But there haven't been any deaths on the U.S. side. And I think deaths in Japan, I mean, unfortunately, it's primarily targeting the elderly in this case, as far as, you know, it being fatal. But deaths in Japan, I think, are I don't want to say a number and be wrong.
Well, it's not really that relevant to this show, so it's okay. But it has been impacting anime production.
Yes.
Which I believe heads us into our news segment. So this has been infecting the production of anime. And so like a bunch of shows are starting to get delayed. And can you tell us a little bit more about that, Lindsay?
Railgun has skipped an episode. One series that's been affected really negatively is A3, which was it's an adaptation of a popular mobile game. It's not idols in this case. It's managing a theater troupe. And they were set up to have a full year, or maybe it was two core shows. It was going to be, one was called Spring Summer, and the other one was going to be Fall Winter. But about episode 4, like, shit hit the fan, and they started pushing episodes back. And they just announced this week that they're like, well, we're just going to do a redo. We'll start the whole season over from episode 1 next season and go from there. And our second season, we don't even know what the fuck's happening with that. That's just, you know, to be decided.
Yeah.
And I assume that's, you know, just because people are deciding to work from home more and that's affecting production. I don't know if it's the overseas element as well, like as far as outsourcing certain parts of animation and maybe to areas that are more affected. We haven't really gotten a straight answer on why this particular virus is keeping anime from being made, but I know that some creators are choosing to work from home if possible and not go into the office because of it. So
it does seem like it impacts productions that outsource a lot more stuff rather than doing everything in-house, which is, you know, these things are complicated, but it does seem like that's pretty much what you can count on, is that, like, if this show was being outsourced a lot, you're maybe going to have some trouble with the episode order and everything like that. I'm crossing my fingers that it does not impact my Azuken. That's the only thing. Because, honestly, otherwise this season, I'm kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
Hasn't affected any of the shows I'm reviewing either, so.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
There you go.
Anything else?
Gainax got into some trouble. We talked about it on the show before.
Well, here's my shocked face.
Yeah, right. So
Gainax basically got into some trouble? What?
What? Well, I mean, it was some pretty serious allegations this time around, but they've cleaned house, essentially, by letting go of their entire board of directors and have hired on a completely new board. This was just sort of announced today, although the decision was made at the same time as the previous head stepping down. Let's see, who did they join up with? One of them is a vice president from Trigger, I was surprised to see. They also got someone from Kadokawa, someone from Groundworks, and I think that's the main three. Yasuhiro Kamimura, he's from Groundworks. He's become the company's new representative director. Mm-hmm. And they've also added Yuko Takaishi from Kadokawa Anime Business Department's Anime Production Division. Atsushi Moriyama from King Records. That's who I was blanking on there. And then Yoshiki Usa from Trigger. And they've got an actual certified public accountant now. I don't know if they had one before, but they make note that they have hired on a public accountant
a new
to
CP.
Manage their finances.
I would say a new CP. There's almost no way they didn't have... I mean, if they didn't have a CPA, I would be stunned, but also...
I'm sure
not.
That they I had would... one. Maybe he just, you know, fudged things for them a little more than this new guy will. But yeah, they've pretty much emptied it out and got a whole new board of directors that are going to try and bolster it back up, get things in order.
I cannot imagine a future scenario where they just don't get acquired by somebody. Like, it just feels like that's the direction that this is heading in.
Well, it'd be them getting acquired and all of their shell companies. So,
right, yeah.
Their tomato company.
The tomato company's gone.
It's gone?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we actually headed down to the place where they were selling tomatoes, and
it wasn't
they funny. were very apologetic. They said sorry that was a seasonal business. So they set up the business just for the season and then wrapped it up. But the guy was so sorry that we'd come all this way to like find the tomatoes that he gave us an eggplant and I think a courgette. Like, so
was he just from like a neighboring business that was right by there? And he's like, well,
yeah. So it's like this big building that's got lots of different like farmer farm to table sort of businesses.
Like a co-op. Yeah.
And yeah, there was a guy who ran it and we were asking him like, didn't Gynax used to have a thing here? And yeah, he was like, sorry, that's gone. And yeah, he just gave us just a run of vegetables. It was great.
Yeah, went home with an eggplant.
Yeah, gave it to a friend of ours in Kyoto, and it is the strangest gift I've ever given anyone.
They're supposed to be good luck, though, aren't they? Like, if you dream of an eggplant on New Year's Day, it's supposed to mean good luck. Or like an eggplant and a hawk in Mount Fuji. It's a very specific dream. But an eggplant is included in there.
That is extremely, it's such a specific story that it would be like, if you gave it away as a gift, you're like, okay, I'm just going to write this up real fast rather than explain it in person and just hand it to them with the eggplant. Like, here's the tale behind this fruit, vegetable. Yeah. Here you go. Here's why this is significant. yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine them not being acquired sometime in the next 3-4 years or something like that. I someone will basically just license the name. Like, that's effectively what it'll be, because they haven't really produced anything significant in quite a while.
Oh, but Urim Blue, it's still coming.
No, it's not. Get excited. No, it's not.
I think I talked to Sadamoto about that in, like, God, it's been almost 10 years since I interviewed him about that, and that was the last time they said that it was really, really happening. They can't find funding for it.
Yeah.
I wonder why not.
Because it'll go and...
don't seem to trust Yamaga. Yeah. Strange.
Okay, so I think that does it for our regular news items, right? So before we get into our main topic here, Callum, did you get a chance to watch the Crunchyroll's The Anime Awards?
So I didn't watch the whole live stream in full, but I watched part of it on playback, because it ended like kind of in the morning here, and I did not feel like it was worth getting up for.
Lindsay, did you watch Crunchyroll's The Anime Awards?
I watched it today.
Right.
Because similarly, it was on a Saturday, one of the few days where I don't have to think about anime if I don't want to. And so I didn't tune in live for that.
Full disclosure, I was a judge and have been a judge on Crunchyroll's The Anime Awards for the last several years. I participated in several rounds of voting before this show. And to be completely frank with you, I thought it was better in previous years, but the last couple years have been kind of like, what are you doing here? It's a little, the show itself... I'm an entertainment industry guy. I like that kind of thing. I always watch the Emmys, the Golden Globes, the Oscars, all that stuff. I always watch that stuff and have for most of my adult and adolescence. Like, I've watched most of that stuff. And these feel kind of like, for the first couple of years, it was a little like they would actually have like an awards show. Like, there would be an audience in a theater. Last year it was a little bit more of a talk show format. Like, they had a host, and then they would bring in some people, some presenters, some voice actors, influencers, that kind of thing. This year it was the same kind of format, but it was being run entirely out of their brand new and extremely expensive offices. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Callum, did you see the videos of the new Crunchyroll offices?
Yeah.
How did that make you feel as someone who lives in Japan?
It's very, very gaudy and kind of, I don't know, like a fake Hachiko statue in the middle of an office. A statue for a famous dead dog.
And specifically, that's the one from the Richard Gere movie. Like, that is that statue.
Oh. Seriously? They didn't have that recreated? They got a movie prop?
Yeah, they bought the prop from the Richard Gere Hachiko movie. That is,
oh my god.
That was in CPAC Entertainment for like 5 years or something like that. Anytime you would travel to Japan, you would always see the...
And apparently there's like a misspelling of Crunchyroll, like in katakana, like Crunchyroll have a specific katakana that they use for anime credits, but it's misspelt on one of the signs in the office.
Well, okay. Listen,
I didn't know that.
I'm not trying to make fun.
Yeah, we're not trying to make fun. I am trying to make fun. I think it's ridiculous.
It did seem like Epcot Center to me. Like, you know, welcome to Japan, quote unquote. Like, sort of Weeb Central USA.
I think they've got a faux facade of the Marui, Shibuya Marui building that's really famous too. Yeah, but the number on it's different because it's the area code for where their office is located instead of the Is it like 509, I think, on the Shibuya one?
It's
109. Yeah, so, but theirs is the three-digit area code for their office.
I get it. Yeah, it's like, oh, all right. I'm a stupid hair contractors. Anyway, we'll get into that in a bit. But the awards this year were basically held in their offices in what looked like kind of like, okay, we've cleared everything out of this conference room and put up a stage. And I believe the audience was quite small. It was like, you know, good.
You can only see a front row through the whole stream, and there might be a second, maybe a third row, but based on like the sound of the clapping, I would assume less than 20 people.
Or about 20, you know, about 20, 25. Yeah. This is all speculation. We don't actually know.
We have no idea.
So they had the host who is from who's a professional wrestler, and he was, you know, it felt like a lot of the money went to that, to get somebody who could keep the audience entertained and also keep the show moving along. And I thought the host did a great job. He's from that wrestler, that WWE group.
Brand New Day might be a band, and
I think Brand New Day is a band.
Band that my brother likes. I'm sorry, everyone.
Anyway, whatever. They had like cereal and shit for a while. Anyway, and they're like openly very otaku-y. Like they love Dragon Ball and stuff. But I thought he was charming and a good host. And then they also had this guy, Tim, who's in a lot of Crunchyroll's branded stuff, like on social media. And all of the presenters were either Instagram or YouTube people. All of them. And
despicable. Getting YouTubers on stage.
Yeah, no, it's not. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
I know.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it felt like it was, I don't know, the production on it and the creative decisions made were kind of like, well, I felt like it could have made this a little more interesting. There was a music video in the middle of it made by the Tim guy, which I thought, and then, like, I know it was meant to be funny, but it was kind of like,
no.
Is it?
Because they mentioned a CD. Like, I think there's actually going to be a CD.
Yeah. No, I believe he cut an album at some point.
Is it a comedy album?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's like a Weird Al thing. I think it's...
I would assume that maybe it wasn't supposed to be funny.
Yeah, totally.
We're still talking about the awards, right?
Yes, we are.
And it's just someone shilling a mixtape on it. What?
Well, I don't know.
There's a lot of advertisements during the stream itself. Now, I understand, they've always had promotion, you know, for these awards. Like, they've had categories that were strictly promoted. Like, was it last year or the year before? They had Capcom, actually.
Yes, Devil May Cry 5.
Yeah, had a branded award.
And that makes some sense, I suppose, but like
missed opportunity to have like a Doritos award or something.
Yeah, the Mountain Dew award for greatest fight scene of the year or something like that.
Why the hell not?
Yeah. But so halfway through the show, they just suddenly ran through like 6 or 7 awards at once.
It was, yeah, that was really strange.
Yeah. So for all the other ones, they would have like 2 influencers or YouTubers come out and say, and had they had these like big pot, like these whatever they are, those big pots that had the awards in them. Little awkward to to hold.
Yeah, they look like what you make like traditional sushi rice or something in.
Yeah, something like that. And but for these in the middle, they just blew through like a ton.
Six
of them
awards.
Yeah, like six awards at once. It would be like if the Oscars just said like, okay, and the here's our presenters for Best Supporting Actress, and they come out and present it, and then they say, here's the winners for Best Sound Editing, Best Visual Effects, Best This, Best That, Best That, and no presenters or anything. They just blow through it.
Didn't even go through all of the nominees for those individual awards either. They just told you who the winner was
for
6 of them.
They didn't tell you who, which I found like a little baffling. Like, yeah. It was, I think they were just trying to keep the show at like 90 minutes or less, no matter what. Like, it has to be less than 90 minutes.
I kind of wondered about that.
To their credit, like the show did only last about like, it was like 1:15 or something like that, 1:20. You know, it didn't go over too long.
You skipped the trailers.
Yeah, right. I was pretty sure we were also going to get some trailers for their original productions, like High Guardian Spice.
I don't know which ones they've announced versus which ones I know about, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of like,
There's some other stuff in there. But I thought we were going to get something on that, and nope. The only thing they promoted was it's an isekai show that's coming out next season, something like that.
They promote, they promoted So I'm a Spider, So What?
And then like a handful of
Eighth Son, Really, or whatever that one's called.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah, and that was an interesting, I found that to be an interesting omission. I have no inside information about why that is or anything like that, but I did find that to be interesting. But the big reason we're bringing this up is because what they did was they gave an industry icon award to Mr. George Wada, who is the, I think he's the president of Studio Wit. Mm-hmm. Wit Studio. And he's a little famous for going out in the press and basically making a joke out of the fact that a lot of anime industry employees are horrendously overworked and occasionally die from overwork. And this has actually been a huge issue for quite a while now. And one of the reasons we invited Callum on to talk about this particular issue. Now, Callum, speaking as a... I consider you to be an expert on the subject, even though, like, you know, obviously it is a huge subject and a massive issue. When did you first become aware of this as a major problem in the industry?
So I want to call myself an expert. I'm always like really cautious to call myself an expert.
Sure.
In something,
yeah. Let's put it like, to put it a little more casually, you do know what you're talking about.
Yes. So yeah, I like to say that. Yeah. But I always assume that there's someone that knows more. So the idea is just to sit there and listen. The first time I became aware of these issues was actually like those mainstream Kotaku articles with Tom Araman and, oh my god, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name, the guy that works at Arch Stagio. Henry Thurlow, that's him.
Oh yeah. Right. I remember that.
Yes, there was also the huge ANN article with foreign anime staff that talks about those issues.
Oh yeah, that was me.
Oh, thank you. That's really good.
Thank you.
She says demurely.
take it where I can get it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So a couple of years back, we visited, Kim Morrissey and I visited the Animator Supporters Dormitory Project.
Right.
Okay.
Which is an initiative to, it started out as like just giving out housing assistance to people that won an award, but then they started to set up their own dormitories where they would specifically give out rent and dormitory access for significantly cheaper than you'd otherwise get in Tokyo, for people that they considered to be hopefuls within the anime space. And there was other projects like because this initiative had support from a lot of really established animators, then those animators would come down and like do like tutoring sessions and those sort of things. Then there's also been a couple of other initiatives to kind of improve the situation. But it's always small, and the issues persist. So in terms of George Wada, this is like an overall problem with the entire industry. Mm-hmm. And there are probably loads of people that are worse than George Wada. I know for a fact that there are, but the thing about George Wada is so he loves America. He loves the West. I think he started off his career working in international sales, like the other way around, selling American content to Japan. He wanted to flip it by working in anime. So when he goes to these conventions, the fact that he's so tone deaf in regards to these issues and kind of proud of it almost, it's the sort of thing you don't say that. We're assuming that you're thinking that, but it contributes to a really negative view of the industry, and it normalizes it.
Mm-hmm.
There's this idea that like pervades the entire anime industry, and I think it's an issue in games as well, where you're expected, because anime is a thing you love, because games is a thing you love, you're expected to go and be above and beyond for something for like a lot less pay, a lot worse conditions, and then you're expected to just be fueled by passion.
It's kind of similar to the whole starving artist.
Yeah, yeah.
Trope,
yeah,
right?
And I would say a general problem with working in the creative arts in general, everywhere in the world, I would say. It's like, oh, you're passionate, so you really want to do this, so I can pay you jack shit and make money off of your hard work.
Exposure.
Yeah, and you'll be, yeah, right. That's the old thing, right? Like, it's, you're being paid in exposure, but you're not. And it just means you're just going to get exploited by some other asshole capitalist. That seems like the thing, and it feels like we're actually getting a reverse normalization at this point. Because it was normalized in the 90s. I remember hearing about the people would chuckle about like, these animators, they'll fall asleep at their desks and sleep under their desks and all of this shit. And that was like a laugh line. That was almost like a, they sure do love their jobs. But they're being paid nothing in exchange for being the entire creative force behind this thing that you're enjoying. Like, you know, and then that happens in the movie industry. That happens everywhere. That happens in the U.S. animation industry. That happens all over the place in the creative arts, is that there's some capitalist sitting at the top. You know, Kanamori-san is sitting at the top and is cracking the whip and making sure you're getting your shit done for nothing, for no pay, and absolutely brutal working conditions. And you're expected to just shut up and do it because what? Don't you love this? Don't you love working on this?
Say anything, you get blacklisted. Yeah. Like it's pretty well, you know, you're doing animators are paid per drawing in a lot of cases, especially in betweens, right?
Yeah, in between is, I think key animators are paid per cut.
So, and they're paid like nothing per cut. It's like nothing.
I don't know what the pay is per cut, but for in-betweeners, it's like 200 yen per frame.
Yeah. Which for the audience at home, that's about $1.70 or something like that.
Right. And they say that you can maybe do 20 in a month, or not in a month, I'm sorry, in a shift. So how that ends up working out, and Janica, who keeps track of this information for how much animators are making and comparing it to a national average, it's impossible to make enough to make ends meet in that situation. A lot of animators are relying on additional subsistence from their parents. They still live at home, even though they've completed college and whatnot and technically are working full time. They have to live at home and their parents still give them an allowance or something so they don't die. Like,
well, that's that mirrors the old cliche, is that you can really only be an artist if you have like a trust fund or parents that are supporting you, like that's an old cliche,
right,
among the arts, that like you can only make a living doing this if you already have money, but you can't make a living doing this if you don't have any money and you're actually relying on all of this work to put a roof over your head.
Yeah. There are like advocates though, like I mentioned a couple of programs to improve this, and Kyoto Animation is one of the most famous advocates. It's even literally written on their website that like they aim to like give animators a better life or something like that. So I think the comments by George Wada are just particularly stinging, because we've seen the other sides. We've seen that they're like that there are things you can do to make this better, and I think CEOs could potentially be advocates, but they're just interested in that final product, which is just constantly disappointing. There was one WIT Studio employee who got housing assistance as part of Animator Supporters' housing assistance program before they started the dormitory, and I met one animator who was working at WIT Studio at the dormitory itself. It's very telling when you see like these tags around people's necks at the Animator Supporters dormitory, and you can see that they're employees at these companies, but obviously aren't being paid enough to like afford a place to live,
or at least one that's close enough to the studio itself.
Yeah,
but even then, like the rates when you see them, they're shockingly low. Like that's so little money for such skilled work. And, yeah, you know, like this is a problem all over the world with capitalism, but it's so little. Like when here's one of the things that I really wonder about is that, like, how do you be an ethical consumer when it comes to this kind of thing? How do you do that? Like you're not going to personally investigate every single company to make sure that they're paying everyone a fair wage. You can't do that. You're just a person.
And it's also so widespread at this point, too. When I was reading articles to brush up for this, I was like, wow, over the course of the last 3 or so years, we've run articles that cover like it's not just one or two studios. It's, you know, you've got the guy from David Production. You've got someone from Madhouse. We have someone from Studio 4C. We have an article about WIT Studio. We've got an article about Ghibli. So it's like, and they were supposed to have one of the better programs, right?
But I think famously Ghibli worked someone to death.
They did. Suzuki said as much.
It became like a big rift, I think, between Miyazaki and the rest of the studio. And they all, you know, I'm sure they feel bad, but not as bad as the person who's been dead for a while as a result of working on something.
Character designer.
Yeah, and everybody that I've ever interviewed, every ex-Ghibli person I've ever interviewed who, like, used to work there, like, in the 90s or the early 2000s, you ask about their Ghibli experience, and they get this, like, look in their eye. It's, like, middle distance, like, never again. Like
I've had the same.
Just crushed under the heel of this thing, and it's like is this worth it? Like I don't know. It makes me think twice. It makes me feel really bad. It makes me feel bad as somebody who sort of has been covering this for my entire adult career, and yet am I just enabling this system? Like am I enabling these people to continue abusing these wonderful artists?
I have wondered that for a while. And like the alternative is for like a widespread boycott of all anime, like fictionally, like imagine everyone stops watching anime. Then, I mean, you are getting like all of these people lose their jobs and find something that probably does actually pay more, even in like a convenience store, like they're probably doing better. But like, then it's that thing about like the passion as well. Like, yeah, like that's what they want. They want to be working in this industry. They just want better conditions. And
yeah,
to be given the time, like especially scheduling these days is a nightmare. And like they want to be given the opportunity to create their best work. I think that's my favorite part of Eizouken, how like you have Kanemori, the like the producer type, who has to keep on like telling the artist to compromise and compromise and compromise because they're coming up against a tight deadline. And that's every anime. I think one of the big differences in a lot of game studios and other artistic studios and anime is that anime generally doesn't specifically have crunch. It's just they are always in crunch.
Right. And yeah. Which is something, which is something that I've known for a while. Like if you have a full-time job as an animator, you are never not absolutely on a back-breaking sweat deadline. Like it is, it seems like kind of a miserable existence, if I can be completely honest. Like,
definitely. Yeah. A couple of the articles that we have up, they're talking about people working 300 hours of overtime in a month,
right.
You know, like passing out while walking home, being at the office for 3 days at a time, and then only going home to shower and sleep for a couple hours and then coming back, you know. And again, it's widespread. The only solution, in my opinion, and there's been some movement in this, is unionizing. There's a group in Japan, they call themselves the Black Company Union. And Black Company, for people who are listening who don't know, is a term used for companies that kill their employees more or less through overwork.
Yeah.
So you have this union that's come up, and animators have started to join it to try and negotiate to get their overtime, get paid the overtime that they're owed, or to improve the working conditions within the studio that they're at. What this happened to Studio 4C not long after Children of the Sea film came out. An animator joined with this union to try and get their overtime pay and also basically have an advocate because they weren't providing stuff that they were supposed to by law. Japan states that the recommended number of overtime hours is not to exceed 100 within a month. And these are people who are working over 300 in some cases. You also have, they're not providing health checks that they're required to by their employees or by law for their employees. And they're not giving them like actual copies of their work contracts. So they don't know how overtime is even supposed to work within the scenario, or they don't have written proof of how much they're supposed to be paid. It's really fucking shady.
Yeah,
shit.
It's very exploitative. And the, like, so you'll look at the number, just the sheer number of shows in a season.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is not a big industry. It's not that big. Like, you might have what, like a dozen studios or something like that, maybe a little bit more than that. In a country that is not particularly huge on population to begin with, and there's 40 new shows every 3 months, it's fucking absurd.
Yeah. So when you say like a dozen or more studios, that like I'm presuming you're talking about like studios that are like the main animation production.
Yeah.
Guys. Yeah. So it does seem like with all of these new shows, it's way more common for a name to jump up out of a studio, and I'm just going, who the hell are they? It's like, it's literally my job to know who they are, but like, it's just studios that were only ever doing outsourcing work are now being given responsibility to do full shows,
right?
And directors who have never directed series are suddenly like first-time directors, which always sounds nice until you realize they're a first-time director because everybody else is too busy.
Yeah, and then the thing that they made was My Sister, My Writer or something like that.
yeah.
So you see the results on screen. But like it does seem like it's an enormous sort of content glut for an industry that is just not, just really not equipped to handle it, that much production in the first place. Like, I feel like if they just said, like, okay, we're only, not that there's a single consortium that decides this or anything, that's, you know, that's fantasy land, but if production just slowed down even a little bit, it feels like that would at least help alleviate some of the overwork issues. I can't tell if, like, I'm not sure if I'm connecting too many dots here, but it's like, okay, horrible overwork problem. People die. They're totally underpaid. They're living in these dormitories and stuff, just to try and make a living in Tokyo. And there's so much new anime that it's impossible to keep up with all of it.
Yeah. One of the factors in that is that anime. It's hard to blame the animation studios specifically. I blame George Wada for his claims and his flippancy towards it.
Yeah.
But also, animation studios often aren't really given a say. Like, you have to actually invest in the anime to be on that production committee. Right. And then you're in a place where you can kind of negotiate the schedule a bit. And also actually earn money from the success of your own show, which I feel is the most ridiculous thing that a studio can make an incredibly popular show, but just because they didn't financially invest at the start, they get nothing back from it.
Right.
That's absurd.
Yeah, so a lot of studios, part of their strategy to being able to control those schedules is investing in shows to make sure that they can have a voice in there and say, this is way too much for our staff.
Right.
Is there a way, an easy way, when you're looking for an anime to watch, to know, I assume that, you know, if it's not based on a previous property, you might have a better chance of having the studio be part of the production committee in that case, as opposed to like an adaptation. But even then, it can be hard to say. It could be original production that was put together by a bunch of toy companies to sell shit. Is there an easy way to like know which shows the studios were part of financially, and so you can maybe gear your, you know, hopefully they're also good, but support those shows more openly so that you know that the studios are going to be have a bigger take, and that could benefit the workers, the animators there? Is like there any way to?
Yeah, you'd have to specifically go through the credits, find the list of producers, look them all up, and find out if any of them work at the animation studio.
Yeesh.
It would be pretty tedious.
Yeah.
It would be tedious, yeah. And like, there's some people that are like actually compile those sort of things, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd have to dedicate a whole lot, like a tremendous amount of time to it, and really know your shit in order to really get in, like dig in that deep.
Yeah,
if you're aiming for ethical consumption, I suppose.
Yeah,
if that's your aim, like which mirrors ethical consumption in any capitalist system, like that mirrors anything you would like walk through a grocery store. How do you do ethical consumption here? Mm-hmm. How do you make sure that no one that worked on any of this stuff was mistreated? Well,
you can't.
And if you're walking through the grocery store, the odds that everything you purchase had people who are being mistreated, thanks to late stage capitalism, is like 100%. Like, there's no way you're buying something that was not.
Yeah, you'd have to either
have someone,
you know,
getting abused.
Really, like off the grid, start growing your own vegetables, or only shop at co-ops, or local community garden type stuff for your produce, and
And I can't. I'm not making an argument for not caring. I'm just saying, like, you can't draw your own cartoons. Like, I mean, you could, but
no one wants to see my cartoons.
No one wants to see my cartoons. So it's such a complex and upsetting issue, because I personally, I think, like, and I hope that like something like Eizouken, which is like probably one of the most popular shows of the season, I hope something like that educates people on exactly what it takes to make this stuff and the types of personalities that go into making it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I really enjoy about like Kanemori, for example, is that she is portrayed as largely ethical. Like, she does respect Tsubame and Midori. She does respect them. There was a whole episode where she was like, well, you're gonna have to work 24 hours a day for the next month if you want to finish this shit on time.
And she was doing what more producers should be doing, which was bringing up ways of like making things more efficient.
Yeah.
And finding out, if we do this, then we could save you a load of time.
Yeah, which I thought was great. It's like, hey, listen, I get it, you're a dreamer, you're a radical dreamer, but we gotta turn this from a 15 down to maybe like a 7 in order to get it done on time and not kill you. So,
like, right.
Which I feel like in today's production environment with, you know, Netflix, AT&T, and Sony basically controlling the entire industry at once, you really do need to introduce some ethics into your production strategy. Because the overwork thing it's horrible. It makes me upset. Like, when I think about it.
Don't make jokes in front of a large audience before your premiere about granola bars.
Like, yeah, don't do that. It's not cute. It's not funny. It's not cute.
I really do think that it would be great if... Because, like, these con appearances appear all the time. And almost always, they send along, like, a producer to, like, supervise them, often from Aniplex or something like that. And it would be great if... Nobody could get through a single panel without somebody asking about overwork or underpay or bad management or any of these stories.
Yeah, which is what we do at Anime News Network. Every single interview with the producer is always like, how do you manage life work balance? How do you do it? And do you care about life work balance?
There's so many excuses. And
the answers are always like, haha, well, sweat drop. It's always like that.
Yeah.
Well, our employees are very passionate. All right.
We asked Wada it just last time he was here in July for Anime Expo, and his canned response is usually, you know, how much the animators just really love their job and how the positive response from overseas audience just fuels them.
Yeah, and you can't see the face I'm making right now, but I'm making a face that you can probably imagine.
Is it the Kermit face? Yeah, it is the Kermit face, isn't it?
I don't know, man. It's a tough question. What's Callum, tell us what can people do to help? Jeez.
Yeah. Because I was predicting this question. when you first asked me to be on this podcast, and I was like, and I remember just it's freezing in Japan right now, so I just sit in front of my heater sometimes. So I was just sitting there on the floor, looking through my phone, going through all of these things, thinking about all the stories that I've heard, like, off the record and stuff, and going, it's all hopeless. Yeah. I think what we can, what people can do is the answers need to come from the anime industry itself. There's no point just telling people in the anime industry what they already know. And it's looking out for the positive stories and supporting them, or the positive initiatives and supporting them. I don't think boycotts would actually work. I can only see that hurting the artists.
Hmm.
When Kyoto Animation is back and running, absolutely go to the theaters to watch their films. Go support them in every possible way, because the fact that they built themselves and they probably turn down work all the time purely for the fact that they value the life work balance of their artists.
Right. They were a studio that they weren't producing even an anime every season, you know. They were much more selective, it seemed like. And they were doing those novel contests to bring in ideas for properties, you know, where they were working directly with one creator, and then they retain the IP for that then? So...
Yeah. Even, like, Yuffa Table, like, evade as much tax as you want.
Yeah,
if it's going to improve the life of the artists and keeping things in-house often is... a good idea, because then you can offer the benefits that come with employment.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that they're not overworking, but there's some good sides to that. I think Yuffa Table staff have been overworking, but probably not as much recently now that their schedules seem to be a bit more sensible.
So we have some Twitter questions. I think I should get to these. Over Double One says, has anyone tried to organize a union at an animation studio in Japan? That's a good question. I actually don't know if what unionization looks like for this industry.
Toei has one.
That's it.
Thanks to Miyazaki, right?
Yeah, I don't really know the history of it.
Miyazaki and Takahata like formed the union over at Toei Doga before. That's kind of one of the things that makes the overwork and death situation at Ghibli kind of interesting, is because they were organizing that in the the 60s or 70s.
Bosses.
You can do it. I just don't know what the process is, but I think they should. Well,
given the global attitude towards unionization right now, I would be out on the streets with them, but I would not hold out hope for their chances, which is depressing. Anyway, Cheese Chimp says, Zach, you were a judge for the Crunchyroll Awards. I was. But you were also retweeting some of the criticism of the George Wada industry icon for his stance on workers' rights. Do you have insight onto how he was chosen, or did that bypass the judges entirely? It bypassed the judges entirely. I was not... I
thought that would be the case.
Yeah. Oscar voters don't vote on who wins the Lifetime Achievement Awards. You know, they pick the movies, but not that. That's something selected specifically by a committee within the Academy, not the judges. So
I was curious. I don't know if you can answer this. So, but did any of your picks end up getting awards?
I don't know. You'd have to remind me of who all the winners were in order for me to tell you who won. I mean, like some of them were nominated, but the way that process operates is you basically are helping them winnow it down to who the nominees are.
Right.
I've never particularly felt like my votes counted for too much. I don't think the judges' votes are weighted against the public votes. I think it's all kind of tossed into a thing.
Claim they're weighted.
In my opinion, well, maybe they are. I don't know. I don't have particular insight into the exact backside of that. What I am asked to do is, here's a list of things. List your picks, and then here's another list of things. Pick your favorites, and then that's it, and then that's it. Process finished, we are not, at least as far as I know, we are not invited to vote on whoever wins the industry award for excellence in the field of excellence.
My most cynical take on that is that it's just a business thing. That like this is they want to do business with Wit Studios, creates a Crunchyroll original. And so they give George Wada an award. That is the most cynical take that I have. It's probably not that far off, but...
It is a cynical take. We don't know, though. It's all disclaimer, speculation. Okay. Brave New Dust. Is there anything we, as an audience, can do to try to help make sure these workers are treated fairly?
No, they're fucked.
Yeah. Well...
I was going to say make demands, but not like... I mean, I think if the more you publicly, whether it's on social media or, you know, just comments or whatever, that let producers and stuff know that this is important to you. And the more people that do that, like we were saying about always asking during interviews, start asking during panels. If you go to a con, if there's a producer there, raise your hand and be like, you know, I hear a lot of problems go on in the anime industry with overwork. What are you doing at Studio X to help your animators live their best life, or, you know, not succumb to overwork conditions? Just start asking them at all of the cons. Some of these producers really, like you were saying earlier, some of these producers really do like to show up at cons. George Wada is one of them. He appears at quite a few. I've interviewed him like two or three times at this point because he's everywhere. And there are going to be other producers there too. Show up to their panels, even if you haven't seen the stuff that they're, you know, there to promote or whatever. You see a producer as an industry guest, show up at their panel and ask, and keep asking, to be fucking annoying about it.
Be annoying about it. And then I would also suggest, like, go to, if they allow questions at, say, the Netflix panel at Anime Expo, say, like, hey, what are you doing to ensure that you have X number of new anime coming out this year? What are you doing to ensure that the in this notorious industry that's notorious for overwork and mistreatment, are you doing anything as a company to ensure that all of your workers are treated fairly? Are you doing anything about that? You know, and you don't have to be like a belligerent asshole about it, but
no,
just asking them about it. You know, you don't have to. In other words, you don't have to behave like you're the cops,
right?
But letting
ask with empathy, like you care about anime and you care about the people that work on it, and you just want to know that they're doing okay,
right?
You know? Yeah, you don't have to be an asshole. Show up with your friends too, because they're only going to pick a couple people to raise their hand. So if you all raise your hand, better chance of your question getting asked.
Yeah. Kimberly Pham asks, do you feel like the Animator Supporters Group has had an impact overall with supporting new animators entering the industry? Callum, that's a little bit more for you.
Yeah.
I love Animator Supporters, but I'm not entirely on board with their recent crowdfunding campaigns, which have been specifically about making an anime themselves, like to make an anime short. It's just kind of like... This is not the problem, because Jun Sugawara, the guy that runs it, he's got big ambitions. He wants to reform the entire anime industry's system, which would pay royalties directly to the animation staff, which is wonderful, but it's not going to happen. And the fact that he's asking for money to go into a short anime project when I think... Just having something small there to support a small amount of artists is good enough as an example, instead of just putting them to work. It's just give them a place to stay. They've already got work to do somewhere else.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think you're on the right track there.
Yeah, like, it's like, there are there are some artists out there now who do incredible work. There's one that is an action animation director on newer seasons of Attack on Titan. They who have gotten housing support from them, and that is the role that I think they do best. The fact that they support these people who wouldn't be able to live in Tokyo otherwise until they can get to that point where they can get promoted and start to make a wage that's livable.
All right. Third to last question. What about Kyoto Animation specifically has allowed them to be on the cutting edge of best business practices in the anime industry? Is it because they're outside of the Tokyo industry bubble, pure choice, or something else? Callum, do you have thoughts on that one?
I refer to Kyoto Animation as a fortress. Nobody gets in, nobody gets out. Like, not literally, but they never...
Right.
They don't do outsourcing work for any other companies now, and they never they don't hire outside companies generally to provide animation.
Right.
They do everything in house, and because they are known for such incredible quality, and the fact that they own their IP a lot of the time, they're able to get good deals, and they're always on the production committee for their stuff, usually quite high up. And yeah, they're able to control everything. A lot of people have advocated for other companies to do the same. I think someone asked Kinemba Citrus's president about this, and he replied that it took Kyoto Animation 30 years to get to this point. So it's very much a gradual thing,
right?
But it's definitely something that more studios should be aiming for.
Right. NobleKind92 asks, if things keep going the way they are now, how long would you estimate it will be for the streaming bubble to burst? Well,
it's already downsized quite a bit.
No, it's consolidated. What it's done is that all these companies are now owned by the same couple of mega conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
In my estimation, and Callum and I perhaps share this cynicism, they will keep driving it into the ground until it's no longer profitable. And once it's no longer profitable, that's when the quote-unquote bubble will burst. But it seems to me like now that it's basically three or four companies that run the entire industry from the top down, and vertical integration is only getting worse, these monopolies are only getting worse, it's going to get ugly. At some point, it's going to get ugly. I say this as a detriment to the company I work for, because the more shit there is to talk about, the more we have to talk about, the more we produce, the better we do. I really would like to see a downturn in production. I would like to see less anime. Like, in light of all of this stuff, it's like, yo, I'm fine with 20 shows every 3 months. I'm fine with 100 new shows a year. Like, that's enough. You don't need twice that number. Like, and I don't know, man. It's hard to process.
Yeah, I think eventually, like, so things need to turn around quickly, and we'll see what sort of, like everyone's all about originals now. Everything's gonna be a streaming original. So we'll see if they're able to keep up the quality and limit the quantity of those sort of shows.
Right.
But that's just me being hopeful.
AdamBomb7 asks, other than equating the quality of animation to a budget, what is the biggest misnomer about the animation process?
I feel like I've been answering too many questions.
No, that's why you're on the show, to answer the question.
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. Schedule is a big one. Usually, like, the staff is also a big one, but that's also part of schedule because you need to have less shows to be able to organize for great creators to be part of your show. Time, yeah. That's why, like, as I said before, like, having the studio on the production committee allows them the power to kind of say, hey, we're going to make this from here to here. This will be our schedule, and we own part of this show, so we can kind of enforce that and have a voice at the table.
Yeah, I think it's a little overblown, the whole, like, budget means absolutely nothing.
Budget means something.
It means staff. It means you can hire enough people to finish the show. Like, I get it. Money doesn't always equal quality animation, but there's a dot missing here where it's the only reason this is being made is because there's enough money to make it. And if there's enough money to make it, that means they have enough money to hire people to make the show. So,
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, when it goes over that, it's often the case where the most expensive of episodes are usually not that great because they have to use money to patch over holes a lot of the time.
Yeah, but sure.
I feel like it's more about that initial budget that's set at the very start.
Yeah.
Than the budget that ends up being, like, obviously if you are only giving CG studios especially have this issue where producers don't want to give more money than 2D animation would cost, but 3D animators get paid more in general, and there's a load of like infrastructure issues with 3D, like keeping up a rendering farm, all of those sort of things. So they've had to like kind of downsize on work. So, but then if you provide them the budget they're actually asking for, then you get incredible quality. Yeah, and there's varying situations with that in 2D animation as well.
Right. Okay. All right. I think that about does it. Yeah, I think we're finished here. Okay. Well, Callum, thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us with this stuff. And well, the only thing I think we can do is really just hope the situation improves in some way for someone somehow.
Yeah.
And just try to be conscientious. Try to be conscientious consumers in the meantime as much as you can.
Still enjoy Wit Studio shows, like,
sure. But Vinland Saga was great. But
face to face with the man, tell him what you think.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, all right, that does it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Callum for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe, leave us comments, whatever it is, you know, it helps the show. Who cares? We'll see you all next week.